Welcome, everyone, to another program in the webinar series brought to you by the Traditional Chinese Medicine World Foundation. I'm Larry Stoller. Today, we're in for a treat, I'm sure. Our guest is Dr. Heiner Fruhoff. Heiner is a teacher, practitioner, and scholar of sinology and Chinese medicine. He's the founding professor of the College of Classical Chinese Medicine at the National University of Natural Medicine. His private practice specializes in the treatment and prevention of chronic, difficult, and recalcitrant diseases with Chinese herbs. And he's a longtime friend of the TCM World Foundation, having presented at our annual conference multiple times. He's going to be talking with us today about the clinical relevance of unity consciousness and yin-yang duality. So, Heiner, welcome.
Thank you so very much for having me.
Yes, I'm delighted you're here. I'm very excited about this conversation. You know, I think we should just jump right in. So I want to ask you, what is it about unity consciousness and yin-yang duality that's so important in Chinese medicine and maybe so important in thinking broadly about health today?
Oh, we live in a time when we have forgotten where we think that all of the answers lay in the future. And we have maneuvered ourselves into a dead end of sorts with our understanding of science, and that looks exclusively at the structural world. And ancient people universally, whether it was the Chinese or the Egyptians or the Sumerians or the Mayas or other cultures, looked at the world of the invisible that all of these manifestations sprang from. And that is become lost in the modern world, and all of the problems we have, not just in medicine, that despite of all our technological advances, there's so many diseases that can't even be diagnosed and much less being treated. Of course, the destruction of the natural world all come from this over-focusing on the realm of the material, which from the perspective of ancient wisdom is merely a appendage of some invisible root. And the main focus of exploration of ancient cosmology, philosophy, and also medicine was this looking at this invisible root and what the condition of that is as a reflection of that cosmic root in the human body and treating that. So that is, in a certain way, we've become crippled as modern people by being mesmerized and hypnotized by looking at the realm of the material, rather than looking at the creative force behind that, that is creating that. And to ancient people, that was the spirit consciousness of the universe itself that we as human beings are meant to emulate as our human mandate, different from animals that are instinctually driven. This pursuit and recognition and constant connecting to with our own consciousness to that invisible creative source of the universe is the deepest meaning of what it means to be human, and we've unfortunately forgotten about that, and as a result of it, I believe many of our modern depression and diseases stem from that aberration.
So how would that play out in practice? Like, if you see depression, let's say, as a sign of living from within a framework that's too focused on the material world as opposed to the invisible roots, how would that start to inform your thinking clinically as a Chinese medicine practitioner?
Well, there are the movement of this unity consciousness and energy as it moves through its cycle of manifestation in nature as well as in the human body what ancient people have done is they divide it into different portions to scientifically make sense of it. And when there's a problem, say the problem is in this corner. And so the very familiar division into yin and yang in Chinese medicine, or the so-called five phase elements, and then also the 12 meridians are nothing but artificial conceptual divisions of this unifying electric force that is intelligent and conscious and is presenting itself in its cycle of waxing and waning and birthing and dying. And we have focused on a very small portion of that in the modern world with the lens of modern science, and then following that modern medicine. And that would be, in Chinese medicine, the large intestine, the lung, and the spleen and the stomach functions within the human body, which are primarily in charge of developing muscles and shaping the physical form of the human body. And so our pursuit as modern people is to go to the gym and take protein powder and, you know, through diet and exercise, and look buff and look good and do something to our biceps and our six-packs. And in the function of nature, in the larger cosmological cycle, we are focusing on, you know, the production, you know, like industrial revolution basically is the equivalent, is the extreme equivalent of these functions in the body, meaning we don't focus on the process of how something is being transformed into nothing, but we're particularly fascinated with creating something out of nothing and making more and more of that, and then value that stage of the development over everything. And so that is what we're constantly trying to push, that the stock market is going higher and higher, and that the gross national product is higher every year, and that as in our American pursuit of happiness, we are becoming richer and richer, and we're accumulating material things. And that unity consciousness energy, the creative source where everything comes from, is an immaterial, electric, yet and at the same time intelligent impulse. And the more matter there is, matter has a tendency to be dense. And this is most pertinently expressed in the myth of King Midas in ancient Greece, who was so into his accumulation of material goods that while he was the king, that wasn't enough. So he wished that everything he touched would turn to gold, and his food turned to gold, and his beloved daughter turned to gold. And so he miserably starved to death, and everything around him became dense and dead in a certain way. Movement is life. Structure in a certain way is dense and less alive, less moving. And so as we surround ourselves as modern people in the industrialized world with more and more stuff, and we imbibing more and more stuff, our vibrational potential, our ability to resonate with that intelligent cosmic source out of which all life sprang from in the first place, is greatly diminished. And so we feel disconnected from our cosmic wellspring of nourishment. And as a result of it, despite being living like kings and queens and living richer and more comfortable than anybody's ever lived before in the 200,000 plus years of human evolution, we feel more depressed and more fearful and less willing to stay in this body at this time in comparison to any time before.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you've used the term that the invisible source is conscious and intelligent, and we're in modern life, we're disconnected from that. And I wonder if you have any way to help us understand what intelligence are we talking about? What's the intelligence that's available in this invisible realm?
Well, our modern idea of science is very much, as we mentioned, is a 90% focused on structure, and as a result of it, then, you know, in medicine also we favor the structural components of our science, which is anatomy and biochemistry, and but more and more, due to the breakthroughs in modern physics, thanks to Einstein and Bohm and Bohr and people like that, quantum physics, etc., and later people like Fritjof Capra, who started in the 1980s a wave of books like the Tao of Physics, basically saying that our modern and most advanced understanding in physics of the world is, on the quantum level, is that everything is vibration, everything is movement, and that truth is resonant exactly with what the ancient wisdom traditions have been saying. And something that we as modern people, of course, have greater difficulty with then is to acknowledge this vibratory part of our reality as anything more than just electromagnetism or bioelectromagnetism. It's some kind of, like Rupert Sheldrake, for instance, saying that, similar to ancient people, that there is a before matter forms, before an organ also forms in an embryo, there is a field reality there first. So first comes the qi, using Chinese medicine language, and then comes the structure. So we, in our science, have progressing toward that realization, but we're having a greater difficulty in comparison to ancient people than to acknowledge that it's not just arbitrary waveforms that are out there, but that there is a regulating, intelligent function behind that. So in Chinese medicine, we would say it's where the qi goes, the structure follows, but the qi, as being the electromagnetic reality of the body that we influence with acupuncture and herbs, for instance, massage, before that there is something that is called shen, and shen literally means light. And we most often translate it as spirit, though. And that is more than just electricity, but is that, and it seems to be, from a perspective of modern science, just, and it's mostly statisticians that say, mm-hmm. It's impossible that we have, like, these wild waveforms out there that just arbitrarily caused the structures to appear that we now call life. But that there is a 1 in a billion chance that happened at the first millisecond after the Big Bang.
Right.
So there is
right.
this organizing kind of consciousness. And, of course, it's not that we are not dealing with that in Western society, quite the opposite. We've just sequestered that completely into another realm, and as a result of it are somewhat divorced from holistic thinking and become depressed and anxious, namely that we have science over here dealing with the structural realm, and then we have religion over here dealing with anything that has to do with a spirit and the realm of the immaterial, but you need to believe in that in order to connect to it. There is no scientific basis for that. And for ancient people, science and religions were merged in one holistic cosmology and philosophy of the world, which means that there was a unity and a hierarchical structure of the universe that postulates this organizing law of nature, spirit consciousness, from which everything springs, that then sets bioelectric currents into motion in its search to manifest itself in physical form. And sooner or later, there will be a manifestation on the matter side in something that is touchable and visible and that our senses can perceive. And that is the crippled problem that we have as modern people, that we can only perceive things that are manifest, whereas for ancient people, there was a much more open-hearted, because it's the heart, it's the instrument that is used to connect to the realm of qi and shen, to use Chinese medicine language. So ancient people were much more in tune with resonating with and recognizing and diagnosing immaterial energy and consciousness fluctuations, which we as modern people deny or say this is woo-woo or this is religious rapture or so. And so we have this divided realm that ancient people, ancient wisdom traditions effortlessly combined into one holistic way of recognizing the world and into one holistic system of medicine as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're mentioning so many interesting lines of thought we could follow, and I'd like to pick up on a couple of them. But one is from from your topic, because right now you've been talking about the aspects of unity, the invisible oneness that is the source of everything, and then you're also adding that there's something about yin-yang duality that's important. And I wonder if you could speak about that just for a moment, like how that becomes an important aspect of our understanding how this all works.
Yeah, this is a question comes to indeed to the heart of our topic here. Let me maybe quote the very important first sentence of Chapter 5 in the Huang Di Nei Jing, the Yellow Emperor's classical medicine from more than 2,000 years ago. First of all, there's something significant with the number 5, because mm-hmm. 5 is the synthesis of the number 2, which is the first yin number, and 3, which is the first yang number. And so yin standing for structure and the body and the moon, and yang standing for energy and spirit and immaterial. And so one of the reasons why we diagnose, why we, as Chinese medicine practitioners, while we use different systems, the five phase element system particularly important, because it makes a statement right away that says, if I diagnose this human being in terms of 5, I never just look at the structure. I always look at the movement of energy and consciousness within the physical body. Mm-hmm. And my diagnosis will always reflect that. However, because we are modern practitioners practicing in the Western world, and so we've been, just like practitioners in China, mainland China especially, themselves have been influenced by this structuralist way of looking at the world, we are sometimes stuck in the realm of yin-yang, in the realm of duality, which is, of course, the definition of the structural realm. It's mm-hmm. one after the Big Bang, once matter, once heaven and earth separated, as symbolically the ancient texts call that, meaning before, with everything was just a a vibrational clump with an internal intelligence that all of a sudden is expressing itself. And in that world, where in its expressed form, then that consciousness takes on polar form, meaning everything in our world is polarity and is separation. So there's male and female, that's hot and cold, there's up and down, there's left and right, there's thin and fat, there's alkaline and acidic, there's everything is like
everything.
That. Everything. And so Neijing Chapter 5 is about this, you know, our world. It's a core chapter about our world, which is always energy, consciousness, and spirit moving in unison. But then it starts out reminding us, particularly as physicians, since the Huangdi Neijing is a book for doctors, that we cannot get lost diagnosing structure and treating structure, but that our main job is always to recognize the creative force behind that, that the center in yin yang. And that is why in the Tao Te Ching, one of the most important sentences is that the Tao produces the one, the two. So we have yin-yang emerging, polarity emerging out of unity, emerging out of the Tao, which is, of course, another name for this unity, prenatal unity consciousness. But then it's not the two that immediately produce the 10,000 things and the five phases, etc., but it is the three, and out of the three, everything emerges. So it is this reminder that there is this central element that is always there between yin and yang, that is sort of a connecting point to the original creative unity consciousness. So the very first sentence of this chapter 5 in the Huangdi Neijing Suwen, the simple question part, which is the first volume of this classic of medicine that to the present day still defines our practice. And it says, yin yang zhe tian di shi dao ye. What is yin yang? Yin yang is the Tao of nature. It's the laws of nature. Wan wu zhi gang ji. It's a system of categorization for the material world, for the 10,000 things, it literally says. Bian hua zhi fu mu. It's the mother and father of change and transformation, meaning the process of something getting created out of nothing, bian, and that something then disappearing back into the womb of nothingness. Hua, sheng sha zhi ben shi. It's the beginning and the end of the cycle of life, death, and rebirth. And so basically up to this point, it says yin yang is everything. Everything is yin yang is the alpha and the omega of our existence. But then it goes on to say shen ming zhi fu ye. Yin yang, despite being this all-important father and mother of everything, it is but a vessel for the ceaselessly manifesting unity consciousness called Shen.
Beautiful.
And then the last sentence is Zhi bing bi qiu yu ben, which means, so if you treat any disease, be always aware of that fact and grasp it at the root, meaning don't get lost with, oh, it's the liver over here, it's the kidney over here, it's the yin over here, it's the yang tonic over here. It's you have to grasp that central element that's invisible. You might not see it, but it's yin-yang is just a stage on which the central consciousness is ceaselessly manifesting itself. That's why Shen is called Shen Ming here. Which Ming is again means brightness, is often translated Shenming as brightness of spirit, but it really means the ceaselessly manifesting Shen. It's the Shen that makes itself obvious, manifests comes into the light in the form of sun and moon, in the form of yin and yang. And so there is this heart of the universe. The word heart and center are the same. So there's this central Shen in the universe, and the ancient traditions, depending what school of thought that is, you can call that the Tao, that all of the laws of nature are in this, packed into this black, mysterious, invisible black hole that was there before anything else. And then other traditions call that God, or call it the universe, but no matter what tradition, including Western science, is in a certain way always looking for the causative element. You know, where does all of this, what's the smallest common denominator, or the biggest, if you wish to call it that. But
Well, there's one thing I just want to say directly here. I really appreciate that you spoke the Neijing in Chinese, because I think it's, you know, the message is in the Chinese characters, which we'd have to read, have to see, have to look at, but we can hear them. And something about that captures the essence of the message, too. So I appreciate that you shared it in that way. And then, of course, translating. We have to translate it because, you know, we don't speak Chinese. So, but I thought that was really helpful. And you know, I felt just listening to you like that was, you know, drawing me into the heart of the message. And that was really important. But the message itself is exactly what you've been speaking about. Like, this is so important to remember that what we see, you know, the appearances with their polarities, you know, is a reflection of something else that's invisible, that's coming into form, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that is the, in the Chinese context, most certainly, that is sort of the pursuit of the entire Chinese culture. Mm-hmm. Well, Chinese culture is certainly a culture that is incredibly appreciative and celebratory when it comes to the indulgence in the material world. It's one of the world's great food cultures, and I have a dictionary right next to me here, and two giant volumes. It's the biggest books I own, and I have a lot of books that are called a Encyclopedia of Material Things, and that's like some ancient dictionary about every chopstick, every ivory,
oh my gosh,
every planet, every anything is described in great detail.
Everything.
And these people are very appreciative, and we see that at the Spring Festival. Spring is, of course, the cycle of when the material world emerges out of the darkness of invisibility of winter, when all of the life forces are held below the ground, and now all of a sudden the cycle of manifestation gets to a point again where we can touch and see and smell and indulge in things and also eat them. And so that is a big deal, and we, coming up, all of China is already, I'm other than being a scholar and a writer and a teacher and a practitioner, I'm also a business person, have an herbal company. So it's always known now for many, many years, you can't produce anything or put in last-minute herb orders.
During this time.
And it's usually all of Chinese New Year is sometime in the middle this year of February, I think February 18th or 19th or so, but already right now everything is shut down and will be until the end of the month. So this entire month of February is basically shut down, and there's a lot of eating involved, not unlike maybe Christmas time here and social, et cetera. But the cultural, if you say what is Chinese culture, it is particularly the Jingshen Wenhua, the spiritual pillars of China are Taoism, Confucianism, and later Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And with Taoism being sort of more the homegrown philosophy and cosmology, and then a system of cultivation that sprang from it, and then from that Confucianism. Confucius is, of course, like the great wisdom teacher born at in that great age of a spiritual awakening around the world, around Buddha's birthday, 500 BC.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Buddhism as sort of a foreign import from India in about the 2nd century AD. But there are lots of temples in China where you see Laozi and Confucius and the Sakyamuni Buddha in statue form being worshipped together. And so these are the three points of origin for Chinese culture. And you could say that each one of these, in their own way, make it their business to describe and investigate what is this unity consciousness, what is this Shen, what is this Shenming, that's constantly manifesting itself, and what does that mean for us as the human being, because ancient Chinese culture didn't perceive this unity consciousness as something that was disconnected from us somewhere out there, and but that we as human being are in a certain way the pinnacle of the manifestations of this creative spirit consciousness in material form. And so that it is our, so that we are all in a certain way all illuminated, all enlightened, that we're born with the potential, let's put it like that, of complete creativity and enlightenment, the ability to fully understand, not just mentally and intellectually, but in a physical sense, the nature of this world, and that we then literally, like Jesus or the Buddha or Sai Baba or people like this that still exist on this planet, where we can do miraculous things like manifest something out of nothing by mastering these principles of how is yin yang a vessel for this central consciousness, and you know that out of nothing comes something, and if you truly are in resonance with this central consciousness, you become enlightenment, means you are quote unquote the creator. And that is why all three of these traditions do not worship to some external deity that you need to be afraid of, but it is about the mandate of embracing your humanity as divinity, that you yourself is God, that you have the potential of being like the creative force in the universe itself. However, we also have an animal body, and we have the choice to sort of surrender into a world of dumbness and instinctuality where we just instinct driven, and all we do is eat and reproduce and become addicts to certain kind of chemicals that course through our bodies, or we have the potential of being completely free off the fetters of the material world and even able to determine the course of matter and be able to create matter just like the creative force in the universe itself is, and that is the biggest prayer and the biggest mandate that there is for the human being from this ancient perspective, is to embrace this Shen quality of our humanity, because Shen means spirit. But it can also mean human being, and it can mean miracle or miracle worker, and in a certain way it means doctor, which means that is the reason why most physicians in ancient times not only memorized the Nei Jing and learned a lot of about herbs and practiced a lot of herbal acupuncture techniques, but they cultivated their spirit and through meditation, through what we would call qigong or yoga exercises nowadays, and through a certain kind of very strict moral and ethical code and maybe also sound practices, et cetera, to be in constant, to maximize our potential of being Shen and therefore being able to do amazing things and, quote-unquote, awakening the dead, which is often told about spiritually evolved doctors. So Taoism is, if you look at these three traditions then one by one, Taoism is sort of the ancient philosophy and cosmology of China that looks at the nature of the universe and all of these yin-yang, five elements, heaven, earth, human being, those kinds of terms, they in a certain way originate from observation of ancient people of the stars, the sun and the moon, the weather patterns, and then our living inside of that, and then certain rules of living in harmony with nature, certain things you're supposed to do, certain things you're not supposed to do, how to eat, how to dress, and how to breathe, and then also how to move. And particularly at a time when scholasticism emerged in China, where it became evident quickly to people that we were meant to be nomadic and run and move all the time. Now all of a sudden we live comfortable lives and we write poetry and we philosophize that there is energy is not moving as well. So that is why what these qigong and yoga exercises were in China developed by Taoist practitioners, and that was always a part of the quote-unquote spiritual cultivation, as you start with the matter of your physical body to then maximize electric movement and creating a body that is not dragging the spirit down. Confucius was, according to legend, a student of Lao Tzu, and therefore Confucianism is sort of a child of Taoism, is about the while Taoism is about the exploration of this source, terming that Tao, the Confucianism is exploring something that is called Xing, which would be, we can translate maybe as heavenly nature. And it is about the cultivation of a human being's moral and ethical conduct in society. So while Taoism was more physical and was more cosmological, Confucianism is more social, because Confucius was primarily concerned about how do I cultivate myself to this level of the spiritual being in society, in my relationship to my family, to my village that I live in, and to the country as a whole, and to the world as a whole. And so exercise of love and compassion, of selflessness, of wisdom, the five faith element system in Confucianism was primarily about the development of the so-called five virtues of compassion and politeness and trust and integrity, etc. And through the expelling of what they called emotional poisons like anger and blame and things like that. So that is a remnant of that is in the Chinese medicine is the zhang and the fu organs, you know, so that we, from a physical perspective, we know that the zhang organs, they, as the Nei Jing says, zhang er bu xie, they store and do not drain, so they store essential structural essences like qi and blood and shen and body fluids, etc. And the food organs they share, bucang, they are draining and they don't store. And so things like toxins and phlegm and stagnating blood and dampness and wind and things that are not necessary and will harm us, they are in charge of moving those kinds of things through. But from a Confucian perspective, there is also, the zhang organs also store these, our heavenly nature. The liver stores compassion, the lung stores our ability to shine metallically in society by being selfless and therefore become a beacon of that's to be emulated, etc. And then the job of the gallbladder, for instance, to drain out anger, and the stomach is draining out blame and overfixating on something, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then Buddhism is, is working very much with the mind and with sound and breath. And so you working on this term Dao in Taoism, Xing in Confucianism, and Shen, I think is spirit is for all three of them, but particularly the development of the enlightened mind through Kundalini, because originally Shen meant lightning, so electric energy in the control of the autonomic nervous system is particularly important in Buddhist mm-hmm. practices through visualization, through sound practices, basically through vibration that then can affect the autonomous nervous system, literally create light sensations in the pineal gland.
Mm-hmm, right.
In a certain way, while we choose, coming back to the original topic in question, is Chinese culture is next to Italy and others is a great food culture, is a great culture for material things, but at its core, therefore the whole country is called Zhongguo, the country that not only is the central country but embraces the concept of the center. And our medicine is called Zhongyi, which is not just Zhongguo Zhiyixue, which is the medicine of China, but means it's the medicine that, according to this paragraph here we read earlier, chapter 5 in the Huangdi Neijing, treats the source, which is that central unity consciousness place that is before yin-yang, and that is creating yin-yang in the first place.
Yeah, I know. This is... Wow. I'm so glad you kind of came right around, to speak again about where we started. That's sort of very in line with this way of viewing the world, experiencing the world, right? It all comes around, continues, it expresses itself, and circles back. And I thought that was really, really lovely. I think that people who are listening have to recognize that we're, listening to a real scholar speak, And this was very nourishing. And for that, I really appreciate it. Of course, like I said, there's many things you've offered here that could spark off whole other conversations. And I have a feeling, I want to mention this for people, if this is still active, I think it is, you have an amazing website. Is it classicalchinesemedicine.org?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so I really want to encourage people to check this out, www.classicalchinesemedicine.org. Maybe you'll just say a word about it, because it's an amazing resource.
Something we didn't have so much of a... Thanks for giving me an opportunity to say a few words here. The something that is very important in Chinese culture is the element of transmission, mm-hmm. because in order to get in touch with something that our senses cannot immediately comprehend, transmission is an important part of the scientific system of holism. And on one side, it is the classics that constantly come back and say, don't be blinded by the material world, but always grasp the invisible center. But in that process of using the classics, you need a tutor. You need somebody who initiates you into the importance to read these classics in the first place. So very important, particularly in Taoism and Confucianism, is this honoring of the ancestral lineage and honoring of the teachings of old. And so this is, in a way, that website is classicalchinesemedicine.org was not only an attempt to make some of the wisdom teachings that have gotten lost in modern TCM, which all too often orients itself more toward Western science than the ancient roots, is to bring some of these teachings from where they still exist in China, and then secondly, to honor my teachers by making them visible and giving them an audience in the Western world. So there,
right. So people can go there, and there's articles, you know, but also videos of your teachers. Right?
Yeah, there's hundreds of hours of video lectures about some of them more cosmological, philosophical, cultivational, suitable for a general audience, and some of them are very specific for Chinese medicine practitioners.
Yeah, it's an amazing resource, classicalchinesemedicine.org. So I just want to thank you again, Heiner, for giving us I don't even know what to call it. It's a meal, I guess, a deep meal of understanding of unity consciousness, of yin and yang, and of really everything, the whole foundation of what Chinese culture and Chinese medicine is about. So thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for honoring me by having a conversation with you and your audience.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So I just want to say this kind of exciting, stimulating conversation is what we're doing in our webinar series. And there are others that are forming what I would call an ongoing conversation throughout the year about issues like we've talked about today, including broadly the theme of health consciousness, which is the theme that's guiding our annual conference this year happening in October. If you enjoyed this webinar, we have many other webinars for you to listen to as well. You can access them on the tcmworld.org website. Just go to the homepage and the distance learning window and click through and then enjoy whichever is calling you, but there are many there. And also check out the conference page on the TCM World website. This year's conference, as I said, is in October 11th through 14. It's in Reston, Virginia. And our conference always offers you both a rich educational experience. We've often had people like Heiner speak, which tells you the kind of level we're offering, but also an opportunity to go on a journey of self-discovery by actually experiencing the spirit and consciousness of Chinese medicine. So check out the conference, register, take advantage of early registration, and so on. And we'd love to see you there to continue this conversation in person. Thanks again for joining us today, and have a great day, everyone.